Today's podcast was way longer than a normal podcast, so we're breaking it up into two episodes. Today, we're going to give you guys our play-in reactions and predictions for the final play-in games. And tomorrow, on Friday, we're going to give you our full playoff breakdown, a detailed breakdown series by series and who we think is going to win. Make sure you guys check it out. Some of our best podcasts yet.
What an insane last 2 days of basketball, James.
Yeah, no, the 7-8 games in the East and the West, both absolutely incredible. Oddly symmetrical with the star player on the losing team kind of leaving the game with minutes to go.
Very disappointing. Where do you want to start? Do you want to start?
Let's start with Lakers Pels.
Okay. Great game.
Yeah, amazing game.
But really, really, really sad way, like you said,
for Zion to leave with like 3 minutes left. And what was around a tie game at the time.
And not only that, but I think obviously like one thought that I had while watching that game, especially once it got into crunch time, is I see LeBron out there. I see AD out there. I see Zion out there. And I'm like, these are three of the top four prospects that we've had in the last 25 years.
Yeah.
They're for the most, I mean, LeBron had kind of a tough second half of that game, but pretty much all playing to the peak of their power, close to.
Yeah. Well, AD was kind of, AD had a rough offensive game.
Yeah, hit or miss.
AD had one of those weird defensive games where I was like, my God, he's playing incredible defense, but Zion just kept hitting contested layup after contested layup. And like, man, AD played like some really good defense that game, but it didn't matter.
No, because Zion looked like the best guy on the floor that day. And you were talking when we sat down of you, that was the best you had ever seen Zion play.
Yeah. No, I feel like even in Zion's other really good games, I feel like you never saw this like competitive edge that I feel like he really brought. And I think he just was kind of tired of being sunned by LeBron like over and over again.
And just the ability and the willingness to just go straight into AD's chest, into LeBron's chest, over and over and over, to the tune of, what was it, 40 points, 11 rebounds. Like, really, really incredible game. Everything that we could have hoped for, wished for when he came out of Duke. And then the Zion Williamson experience kicked in.
Yeah, it's like the moment things start going well for this guy, just the injuries just seem to happen. It was a bummer, too, because they kept showing the replay. You know, it's like an extended step and then into a drive. And you're like, oh, that was a nice play. And you're like, wait, he got hurt?
Yeah. Brian Windhorst said something really interesting that I had never really thought of. But Zion, the reason he's so explosive partially is he jumps off of 2 feet, but that also just puts you at a way higher risk for injuring like muscles in your lower extremities. So, I mean, the Pelicans battle all the way back. Literally their entire team except for Zion is really like a complete no-show. Jose Alvarado.
Although I don't know, because Trey Murphy wasn't great the whole game, but he hit those 2 threes that I feel like it was one of those weird games where it's like Zion obviously was the main character, but it was almost like Trey Murphy hit the two biggest shots of the game for the Pelicans. Those 2 threes is, I feel like, what really like dragged them back into that game.
Yeah. And Jose Alvarado, I think he got the assist on one of those 2 threes. But they drag them all the way back. The injury happens, and then the Lakers kind of struggled to
close that game out. They slowed down a lot. Yeah, it kind of felt like after LeBron took that charge when he like landed on his elbow and his wrist, I feel like that's kind of where the turning point was for him in that game.
Yeah,
because they just didn't get a lot out of AD. Although at the end of the game, the Lakers kind of won on like, oh, AD's wide open under the paint. Oh, AD's just gonna grab an offensive rebound. Like, yeah. I don't. That's the thing with AD is just like he's always there on the boards.
Mm-hmm.
He's always down there. Like, yeah,
he's pretty good, and we'll see just how good he is, because by winning that game, the Lakers earned themselves a date with the reigning champions, the Denver Nuggets. A tough prize for like a really, really tough battle like that.
Yeah, I guess for the Pelicans, I'm like happy to see them fight back, because like the other Laker games this year, including the one like last week, like the Lakers go up 15 and it's like the game's over.
Yeah.
That in-season tournament game was over the moment the Lakers had like a 10-point lead. This game, Lakers are up to like 18-point lead and like Pels claw all the way back. Like really happy to see that fight from the Pels, because I feel like this team has just never really shown that. But like, is this loss with Zion out going to result in them doing that again against the Kings, or are we going to see them kind of going full tilt again? I feel like I have no idea what Pelicans team I'm going to see.
This is a perfect place to bring up, I think, the sub headline of this game for the Pelicans, and it was just how bad Brandon Ingram and CJ McCollum looked throughout this game. I mean, Brandon Ingram just could not get it. He looked okay in the first, but after he subbed back in, after his first little rest, he just could not really get anything going. And the Lakers are a tough matchup for him, definitely. Like, I will put that out there. But he definitely didn't look fresh.
Yeah, one thing I didn't like for the Pels was, like, the Lakers were really happy to be like, oh, you guys didn't run any switch and Rui's still guarding Brandon Ingram? Like, go ahead, Brandon. Try to score on the guy who's way stronger than you, is the same size as you, and is a better athlete than you. Like, have fun, dude. And it didn't really work out for the Pels at all.
Did not work at all, to the tune of benching Brandon Ingram for that last stretch. Which, Willie Green, like, I've already thought a lot of Willie Green as a coach, but, like, to have the brass nuts to fucking sit Brandon Ingram and CJ McCollum, who was, what, 1-for-11 from three?
Yeah, it was not good.
Like, I mean, I think they've identified their guys. They know Trey Murphy's someone to build around. Zion, obviously, is someone to build around. Herb Jones, I think, is definitely someone they want to build around. But they have so much of the cap tied up in CJ and Brandon Ingram, and I think their value is dwindling.
Yeah, I mean, CJ's pretty old now. He's in his, like, mid-early 30s, and Ingram, I don't know. It's just Ingram just – I've never been a big Ingram guy, because I think the problem with Ingram is, like, yes, he's expanded his three-point shot, but he's just – it doesn't seem comfortable in the not 1A role, but he's just not good enough to be a 1A guy.
It's also a really bad fit for this team, and it continues to get worse.
Yeah.
But we're going to have plenty of time to discuss that. Let's jump to the
one quick observation about the Lakers. Cause I noticed this, it was really interesting. So it's kind of weird. I feel like a lot of NBA teams are, like, always, you know, trying to get that switch so they can get their alpha offensive player on a good defender. And for whatever reason, it feels like every team LeBron's on is just amazing at getting LeBron the switch he wants whenever he wants. One, like, fun play I noticed was they get, like, LeBron on CJ. He posts up, and the open guy's in the opposite corner, and it's like a Lakers turnover. Next play down, LeBron is frantically pointing his fingers around the court like a mad scientist. They run the same post up, but then they get Austin Reeves cutting into the lane, and then they just get Rui wide open at the top. And it's like the Lakers' like ability to adjust on the fly because of LeBron, I feel like, is like this big edge you kind of like secretly notice during the games a lot. Because I feel like with the Pelicans, like, as good as Zion was, like, I don't know how sustainable that is game after game, because he hits some ridiculous, even by Zion standards.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, definitely in a series, if they were to play against the Lakers.
Oh, like, they would get cooked.
Just
but
not tenable at all. I guess it depends who your rim protector is, right?
Yeah. All right. So Kings Warriors.
I mean, I think the headline here is, like, is this the end of the Warriors dynasty?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they've missed the playoffs. What is it, like three of the last four of the last five?
Yeah.
Obviously, they won the finals.
I think this will be the three of the last five. Yeah.
Yeah, three of the last five. Yeah, I mean, obviously, they won the finals, so I don't want to be too melodramatic. And yes, I said they weren't making the playoffs.
There we go. There we go.
Not even a single-digit seed.
No.
No, but I mean, yeah, I mean, it's really eerie, because do you guys remember on the Monday pod, I was like, well, I feel like Clay's just going to shoot them out of the game, and then Clay proceeded to have, like, the worst game of his career.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I don't know, man. I mean, it's the end of the dynasty, right? The dynasty's over, because even if they won the finals next year, I feel like it's like you've won. Well, I guess if they won next year, it's still going.
It's still linked in. It's like a Spursian.
It's like
dynasty.
It depends on like the time window you're looking at. Because if you're going like 2019 to now, you wouldn't call it a dynasty.
I think it's all what I consider like the Warriors dynasty is more like the Spurs dynasty than like the Kobe Shaq dynasty.
So it's more like, well, I guess like I'm like the dynasty I'm kind of comparing it to in a weird sense is like the Patriots, where it's like you won a lot in a clump, and then you won more that are spread out on the back half. But the war, like, unlike the Patriots, the Warriors have been really bad since like 2020.
Yeah.
Like, they had the number two pick one of those years. Like the Patriots never even, I think, like missed the playoffs.
Yeah, it's super interesting though. Like we don't really see dynasties or like cores like this live out their entire life cycle. It like just going backwards. I guess we did see that from the Spurs, which was very unique, and they had Kawhi inserted in there, so it was a little bit different. But you think about like the MJ Bulls went out on top, then MJ retired.
The whole team dissipates.
The whole team dissipates. The Showtime Lakers, Magic gets is HIV positive. It's done. And so like I think people are having very visceral reactions to this because we've been able to see the fall.
I think the weird thing is because I saw a quote from Steph Jones. It's like, I just want to win, which is usually the like the precursor quote to eventually asking for a trade like a year and a half later. But it feels like these Warriors players are like, I just want to win, but I also really don't want to leave this team. And it kind of feels like everyone from the top down, like owner down to the 15th man on the roster, is kind of stuck in this weird, like, I just want to win here. But to your point, it just feels like it's done. I mean, especially with Clay.
Yeah.
And I know Draymond, I dogged on him a lot in the beginning of the season, and he really, really, really picked it up to the point where, you know, I can't say he's that bad of a contract anymore. But, like, he's old. He's got a lot of gray hair.
He's old.
He's got a lot of gray hair and for a guy in his 30s. Like, I don't know, man. Would it shock you if next year he just falls off a cliff?
It wouldn't shock me.
Like, because this year he shot, like, a ridiculously high percentage from three. Like, this could be an outlier season.
I think it needs to be said right now, since you brought up Draymond, it is 100,000,000% Draymond Green's fault that the Warriors are eliminated from the playoffs this year. They had a really bad game.
I'm gonna put
in the play-in.
Can I shift the blame a little bit? Can I give like
maybe I'll listen to it, but I'm not like really
30% of the blame to Clay.
No,
Clay was horrible this year.
Clay was not the worst
player in that game.
But you know what? That dude shot like 38% from three, averaged like 17 points a game. Like Clay is not worth the contract that he was on this year. But Clay is an NBA player still.
Of course, yeah.
And the Warriors were a very good team for most of the year when they were all healthy and all together. The one glaring like thing that went wrong in the season was Draymond Green punched Yusuf Nurkic in the face and tried to choke out Rudy Gobert, and he missed 15 games. And they ended up they were like a game and a half behind the Suns in the sixth seed. Like, it to me, it is all about Draymond. His decisions landed them where they are now. They should be in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, also I feel like there's a lot of roster unrest too on the back end with Moody and Kuminga.
Yeah.
This team, it's just, I think that's the thing with this team is everyone wants to stay. I know Curry's like, we got to bring Clay back, but it's like this team is like aware, but also very unaware that it's like, look, guys, if you guys all want to win, it's time for all of you to go to a new team and take a new role.
So
I don't think there's any rebuilding this core.
No, I don't think so either. I think you have to pivot away from it. But gut feeling, is Draymond on this team next year?
Yes.
Is Klay Thompson on this team next year?
No.
For me, I would say yes to both. Just because I think if Klay wasn't a free agent this offseason, I would say he's gone. But I think he had such a bad end to his season. They're going to be able to get him at a really good price. And I just don't see culturally why you move away from that. But it could go either way.
Yeah, I mean, I saw this random stat that I guess the Warriors' payroll this year was bigger than the fiscal spending of two small countries. So I feel like if you miss the playoffs with that kind of spending, like changes have to happen. But let's touch on the Kings real quick because the Kings took
they won that game.
They won that game. Yeah, I mean,
light the beam, baby.
Yeah, but I mean, now they got to play the Pels. I mean, this is where I really want to go. I'm sorry, Kings. That's all you get. You haven't made the playoffs yet. So the Pelicans were 5-0 versus the Kings this year, and it's weird because the Kings, Lakers, and Pelicans form this like rock, paper, scissors where like the Pelicans cannot beat the Lakers cannot beat the Kings, and the Kings cannot beat the Pelicans. So I went through the five games. Zion played in four of the five. The one he didn't play, and they also won by 33. So Zion or not, the Pelicans seem to just eat the Kings alive. But 6-0 is tough.
It is tough. It is tough. My one worry with this matchup is just where the Pelicans' health is sitting at right now.
And vibes.
Like
if you told me no Zion but great vibes, I would pick the Pels just given the track record of these two teams. But I don't know. I feel like Kings, like, riding pretty high, you know?
All I would need is if you tell me Brandon Ingram is, like, ready to take that number one role, he's all healthy, he's back in shape, everything, like, I would probably take the Pelicans easily here. But I think I'm going to go with the Kings.
Yeah, it's like I don't want to go with the Kings because, again, they're 0-5 versus the Pelicans, who have kind of overwhelmed the Kings with their size. And, like, you know, a 33-point win is almost less telling to me than, like, a 10-point win a lot of times in the NBA because it's like, okay, something probably
happened. At what point did you give up?
Yeah, at what point did someone have an aberration of a shooting game or whatever? But the fact that they won the non-Zion game so handedly too, like,
but they had like a full Brandon Ingram there. You know, that's what really stresses me out about where to pick. It's just like, who, if it gets down to nut crunching time and you're the Pelicans, who are you giving the ball to?
Yeah, I think like what I don't like for the Pels is like no Zion. I just think, I don't know. I think De'Aaron showed in this game and last year that like he's not someone who takes a dip in the playoffs. I'm going to pick the Kings. I feel bad picking the Kings. I feel like there's like two worlds. There's like the world where the Pelicans are like, nah, F that. We should have won that Lakers game. We're going to win this game. Or there's the world where it's like, Zion's out. We're just going to give up.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going with the Kings. Love me some Keon Ellis. Put them all over CJ McCollum.
Max, what do you think? I don't know. I just don't know where to go here.
I'm going to pick the Kings as well.
You know what? All right. You know what? 5-0. I'm picking the Pelicans.
All right. That's a good place to. Oh, now we've got some Eastern Conference
basketball
to talk about.
Wait. Can we just touch on this game real quick? Because I feel like this is the most inconsequential game ever. Yeah. Rest in peace, the Trae Young, DeJounte Murray backcourt.
Ouch. Yeah, no, this is a fine place to start. Yeah, I don't. What a disappointing season for the Hawks.
Trae's gone.
You think Trae?
Yeah.
You think Trae's the guy they move
off on? You know what,
like,
really epitomized it to me? There's a play where Trae's, like, on the left wing in yesterday's game, and, like, DeJounte Murray is frantically, like, pointing at somebody, like, pass him the ball. Mm-hmm. Trae, like, like, just meanders around the court. Forces a very risky pass to Capella that normally is a pass that I'm a big fan of, like high risk passes into the paint. But like Capella's not in a position to finish it. And then like Murray cuts in for a dunk and he kind of looks back at Trae like, I don't know, dude, like why are you just so selfish?
Yeah.
I don't know.
In a season where it's like it's your first full season with Quinn Steiner, this proven coach, it's your second season with your two stars, Trae Young and DeJounte Murray, and then you even go ahead and identify a new, like, high-ceiling young wing. You can't get anything going, Hawks? Like,
yeah,
I don't know where.
So I'm not taking anything away from the Bulls because Coby White has been awesome this year. But, like, and when you're talking about, like, the guards from Chicago are so fun. But
you got to remember
the number one rule of the 2024 season. If someone goes off against the Hawks, it doesn't count.
That's true.
Unrelated, I was doing a little, has Kawhi Leonard really put up big scoring numbers this year? His like one 30-point game in the back half of the season? The Atlanta Hawks.
There we go.
Like the Hawks just allow single players to go off.
Yeah, what did the Bulls have going to the fourth? Like 110
yeah.
points? It was insane.
So Trae Young. Like I think the thing with Trae is like he is the most high-assist selfish player I think I've ever seen. Because he pounds the oxygen out of the basketball, and then it's just like the last second pass. They're not running like actual team sets. They're not doing much. Like, I don't know, man. He's got to be the least fun player to play with in the NBA.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of been the book on him. And maybe,
like, I saw maybe a change like, of Trae Young's never played with an all-star. There's no environment where another all-star could become an all-star playing next to that dude, in my opinion. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're being tough on him, and they deserve this. It should be said, like, what Trae Young has been able to do objectively in his career thus far is super impressive, especially without an all-star teammate. Yeah. To just make the playoffs three times, that's tough. You know, there's a lot of players, even in the Eastern Conference, that we think very highly of that have not been able to pull something like that off. But the culture is just a little rotten right now in Atlanta. I think we both agree on that. And I feel like it's just kind of like you got to put them both on the market and
see who you get a better offer for.
Whoever you get a better offer for, that's who you move off of.
Or both.
Or both.
Because, I mean, DeJounte's getting paid a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I don't love that DeJounte.
Yeah, I don't love his contract. If I'm the Hawks, I'd want to get off both of them.
Yeah, I mean, the tough thing is still you don't have full control of your draft. So, like, I always would suggest to wait to completely move off of all your good players once you have control of your draft moving forward. But I don't know. Sometimes you don't need that. Like, we've seen a couple examples in recent NBA history of teams being able to kind of just work on the fly. They've got Jalen Johnson, so like that's a guy that you can kind of build around that's young too.
Yeah, it's just like they've been in the play-in every year the play-in's existed now, and like it's not the West play-in.
No.
It's the East 9-10 no. play-in.
No, it is not. Anything on the Bulls? And
The Bulls are going to beat the Heat.
Okay. You heard it here first, folks.
Well, so Jimmy's out indefinitely. You know, MCL sprain, MCL injury to his knee. Like, if we don't have Jimmy, I don't know. I have a hard time seeing the Heat.
Yeah. Also, Terry is out as well. Yeah, there's just...
Like, I don't think the Bulls are going to come in and, like, blow us out because the Heat... I mean, I think one thing the Heat really showed in that game was, like, Spoelstra is a defensive wizard. Because that zone, the Heat were running this weird, like, 3-2 zone that I really feel like flummoxed the Sixers for a lot of that game. But... and did help the Sixers to low 100. Like,
yeah,
like, no, the really Heat put on a really good performance, got a lot of great looks on offense, off their handoff actions and everything. But yeah, I mean, I think the whole crux of like playoff Heat was Jimmy Butler.
Yeah.
And if Jimmy Butler's just not there, like, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I mean, I guess I'm with you. It feels wrong to pick even against Eric Spoelstra. But I mean, I will be the first one to admit I have not watched very much Chicago Bulls basketball this season, just because they haven't really been in the mix. Their number one superstar,
they're the best bad
has team. Been out pretty much all season. But I really like what Chicago's got cooking. Like, I feel like it's really rare to have young guards that can all play together. It gave me kind of like OKC 2021 or 2020 Chris Paul vibes of like Dalen Terry is like this long kind of switchy guard that can guard down. And then, I mean, Coby White is just an absolute flamethrower. How fun is he? And
let's see what he looks like in the non-Hawks environment.
That's true.
That's my new caveat.
But he's had a good
season. Anything you do against the Hawks is... It's off. It's off the record in my book.
It's not like he like averages 10 points a game, though.
No, that's true.
You know, he's a good player. He's shown that this season. I'm just saying it's an interesting place to build around for a team that I think coming into this season, we were like, what are they going to do? You know, you got old ass DeMar DeRozan. You got Zach LaVine, who is... I don't know.
Injury, just trade riddled.
Injury, just not a great teammate. And then you just re-signed Vooch. But there's something there. I mean, I think they'll be lucky if they get one game off of Boston. But
yeah, I mean, the Heat could win. Because the Heat are going to play way better defense than the Hawks are. It's probably going to be a close game even without Jimmy. I think what's going to be tough for the Heat is now that we don't have Jimmy, it's like Caruso can spend a lot of time on Hero.
And Hero, who knows if Caruso's even going to be, you know, he was out the second half of that game.
Yeah, that's true. I feel like without Jimmy, the Bulls are going to be able to clamp down a lot of the creators that the Heat, because the Heat don't really have a lot of creators when Jimmy's not out there. And Jimmy's really the main driving kick guy on this team. And I feel like the Heat is a lot of, you know, threes off handoffs, threes off driving kick. And it's like, if you can take away half of that, like, that's where it gets tough.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the type of centers that the Heat tend to just absolutely eviscerate are those slow plotting centers like Vucevic, mm-hmm. where they're like, all right, we're gonna drag Bam all the way out to the top of the 3-point line, and we're gonna run really horizontal sets, and like we're gonna get open shots. So I mean, it could be just one of those games if we just get the Caleb Martin 5 of 6, like the Heat win. But I don't like going into Boston without Jimmy. But although now
you don't like going anywhere without Jimmy,
I don't like going without Jimmy, but. No, if there's ever a team that would probably put its take its foot off the gas if they saw we didn't have Jimmy, it's those Celtics. So bring them on.
You know what? Fuck it. I'll go with the Heat.
You know what? Yeah. Now that I'm talking it out, I'm gonna go with the Heat.
You talked me into it.
I'm going with the Heat too. What you got, Max?
Bulls Nation, baby. No, I'm just kidding. I'm gonna go for the Heat as well.
Let's go. Yeah. All right, the Sixers.
Yeah. You want to? What did you see in that game? Really weird game.
Okay, two things for me. One, I was surprised how little I felt like they got out of Maxey.
Yeah. He really, like,
I think
you forgot about him in spots.
I think that, because I feel like a big part of the Sixers this year has been, like, putting Joel at the top, letting him kind of observe the court, and then running those, like, handoff actions with Maxey. And I feel like the zone just really took the Sixers. Like, that whole first half, the Sixers were just like, ugh. And then Toby was awful.
Oh, yeah. He completely disappeared.
He had some threes that just barely hit the... Like, they were like backboard breakers.
And thank... I mean, Kelly Oubre and Nick Batum really won that game for the Sixers. Because Joel wasn't great either.
No, Joel wasn't great. And I think this is kind of what happened in the Brooklyn series last year. Like, the unheralded 4-0 sweep. Was Brooklyn basically did the same thing where, like... And the Heat did it too, where Joel's got the, like, he's at the free throw line asking for the ball, and literally three people converge on him before he even has the basketball. And teams are just daring the Sixers role players to win them games by giving them wide open shots.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the Sixers can win that way. They have shooters. This is a much better Sixers team that's better equipped to handle that. But they have to be ready for that because, you know, when you're playing a New York Knicks, it's going to be I don't know. The Heat are pretty good. But, like, it's going to be tough, you know, if you're not able to come out immediately and take care of it. Because, I mean, we saw each other in the first half, and I was like, Nurse is going to get this figured out in the second half. Because that's the difference between this year's Sixers and last year's. They have a way better coach.
They do.
And you can see it. But you can't go into a hole when the other team plays a zone, especially when you have the shooting to take care of it. Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, like, we're going to talk about this in a second, more in-depth, the Sixers-Knicks series. But it's like, it's not like you're going to be going against, like, some scrub of a coach. Tom Thibodeau is just about as good of a defensive mind as we have in the NBA. So I think all of those kind of dark arts tricks that Eric Spoelstra was flinging onto the court are still totally in play for this first round series. But I was very disturbed by what I saw out of Joel Embiid.
Yeah, he doesn't look healthy.
And I think he got going a little bit because the Sixers were just completely surrendering the 3-point line to him, which he was like, all right, like, yeah, if you're going to give it to me, I'll just splash.
No, he doesn't
threes.
Look. Did you see how big the brace was on his leg? Yeah, he
kept touching it the whole game.
He doesn't look healthy.
And yeah.
This is why it was a must win for them, because that's just going to give him 2 extra days of rest.
Yeah. But after that, it's every other day, I'm pretty sure, is their schedule.
Yeah.
Which will be super tough. Especially against a just clobbering New York Knicks defense. I don't know. I don't really have much else to say. I feel like you can't take away much from a game where Nicholas Batum saves them.
The one thing, though, about that game that gives me hope for the Sixers is that, like, what I like about them is even if you're getting that version of Joel, and the part of the reason you're getting that version of Joel is, one, he's beat up, but two, because the Heat are so afraid of him getting the ball, right? Like, they're inching in the moment it looks like he's going to get a pass. If there was a coach who's going to take advantage of teams just way overplaying the star, it's going to be Nurse. Like, that's the thing. I kind of like the Sixers if they're, like, after two games, if an opponent's playing them like that, they're probably going to be like, okay, we can get an open three whenever we want.
Mm-hmm. But then we get into, like, a three-point shooting contest. And
they're going to beat most teams in that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I need to see it from Kelly Oubre in the playoffs. He's just such a streaky shooter. Same with Nicholas Batum for most of his career. And when was the last time? I think the last time we saw Kelly Oubre in the playoffs was Washington.
Yeah, but I don't know. Maxey really stepped up in the playoffs last year. For how bad they looked, I'm kind of oddly hopeful because in an actual series, I think, like, I don't know. I don't think teams are going to be able to play them the way the Heat played them for 7 games and win.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the great thing about 7-game series is...
Adjustments.
Adjustments. But adjustments are going to be available for both sides.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
All right. To the actual playoff series, we know that... Well, I guess, do you want to touch on either of the 1-8s? Okay, so it's either OKC, Kings, Pels. I've got OKC winning either of those series in 4 or 5.
Yeah, I mean, it would be interesting if Zion would be available, but you know, he's going to be reevaluated in 2 weeks, which would be pretty much the end of the series anyways. So I definitely have OKC.
I think OKC would sweep the Kings and probably go 5 on Pels.
Yeah.
That's where I'm going. And then Boston versus the Bulls or the Heat. I mean, no Jimmy. I think they probably sweep the Bulls and probably lose a stupid game to the Heat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or sweep I'm right there with you. I mean, no Jimmy. There's a chance the Heat just, you know, give up in that series.
For me, I know you're not there with me on this, but even if the Heat had Jimmy, I would pick Celtics in 5. I want to give them room to,
you
know, fumble one game away. But that team is just
They're really good, talented
right now.
Hey, guys. Producer Max here. As you heard in the intro, today's episode was extra long. So what we did is we cut it in half. Tomorrow, you can tune in for part 2, where James and Patrick will break down all of their picks for the first round of the playoffs. Go through each of those matchups one by one. Be sure to check it out. It's a fun app. Thank you for listening, and you can head over to YouTube to watch us as well. Peace.